Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here today. It is Wednesday. I'd like to join us on the air. The number, as always, is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Now, today, the Dow had another up day. It ended plus 90. But look at that chart very carefully, because the Dow opened early and went right down. And then all of a sudden, if you look at that chart, you can see these periodic spikes just boom, 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 trying to drive it back up. And then finally, middle of the afternoon, huge sudden upward surge. Somebody put a lot of puts on the key indicators, just trying to drive that thing up. And I got to tell you, far from making me feel more positive about the economy, today's Dow chart, not the numbers, the chart itself, really, I think, is advertising the fact that the government is dicking around with the market, trying to drive the number up, trying to get people to come back into the market and, you know, start buying in and get that money flowing again on the assumption that we still have it somewhere to spend. But again, it looks like they're trying to play games. Barack Obama is just desperate for some kind of a flag that he can wave and say, see, I'm making the economy look better and better. Meanwhile, of course, the furor over the AIG bonuses continues unabated. It is almost the only news story we're seeing on the network news. How could they get the bonuses? Are they really performance bonuses when they're not performing? Well, maybe it's retention bonuses because AIG doesn't want them leaving and going to a rival company with inside company secrets, or even worse, we don't want them leaving AIG and going public with what they know about what the company has been doing behind closed doors. There may be some validity to that second one, because going back over the history of AIG, and I posted a bunch of stuff to whatreallyhappened.com this morning, AIG has a long history of some very shady dealings, including stock manipulation, accounting fraud, all these allegations throughout the years. It's amazing that, you know, again, like was going on with Bernie Madoff, the regulatory agencies that are supposed to be keeping an eye on all this stuff were basically just standing off to the side and whistling and staring up in the sky as all of this stuff was going on. But it did get reported. And it did wind up with the former head of AIG having to step down. We're going to be talking about him a little bit later in connection with another story. So here's the interesting thing. On yesterday's show, we were talking about Barack Obama saying that he doesn't really have the authority to go in and interfere with these contractual bonuses. And that is not true, because it turns out, we're finding out just today, that the legislation for the bailout originally had a provision in it saying that if you accept this money, your executives cannot be paid above a certain amount of money, and there must be limits to these executive bonuses and deferred compensation and all the rest of it, because the goal was to put this money where it was going to do some good for the whole economy and not just line some executive pockets at taxpayer expense. This latter provision about the bonuses was taken out. It was there to start with. It got taken out by the U.S. Congress. And we know now, of course, that Chris Dodd and Barack Obama got lots of money from AIG during their campaign seasons, $100,000 in the case of President Obama. And already we're seeing the various Congress critters who've been getting money from AIG. They're already on there saying, well, yes, I did get money from AIG back when we all thought they were a respectable company. And that had absolutely no influence on the fact that we've just handed them hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to clean up this mess. And one has got absolutely nothing to do with the other. And of course, we don't believe that one at all. But I'll tell you, they're putting so much attention on this bonuses issue, and it really is just a tiny fraction of the total bailout cost that you are being stuck with. I am still of the opinion that the bonuses are a distraction. They're making a big issue out of it, because what they don't want to do is they don't want you looking at the fact of the counterparties and the derivatives. And it's the derivatives that are soaking up all the money, and it's the counterparties who are getting that money, and nobody wants any attention paid to that at all. Everyone's focusing on, oh, $150 million. Some people are saying it's $450 million. But $150 million of the money went to these bad old executives, and they're the bad guys, and you should be angry with them. And then we find out that Congress basically opened the gate to allow this to happen. But in the meanwhile, there's all this additional billions and billions of dollars. Starting to sound like Carl Sagan over here. Billions and billions of tax dollars blowing off across the cosmos. And that's the real issue, because it's so much more money. Where is it going? Who are these counterparties on all these credit default swaps? Why wasn't there a provision in the bailout bill to say, cancel the credit default swap contracts? Invoke force majeure. You're on the verge of bankruptcy. Most financial obligation contracts have a clause in there saying, if we go out of business, we can't be held to this obligation. It's called force majeure. Why aren't we addressing the issue of these derivatives contracts? Because that is where the loss is. Or is it just sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, agreed to between the heads of the corporations and the U.S. government that, hey, we're just going to go on pretending this is a real debt and a real obligation instead of just fancy bookkeeping and gambling debts, and we're going to stick the American people with it? And I've mentioned before, Wall Street was supposed to be a mechanism by which ordinary working-class Americans could invest in and share the largesse of America's industrial capacity. Well, we've let our industrial capacity just go away. We're in our fourth straight year of declines now, as a matter of fact. And here's the problem. Everyone is buying and selling the stocks because of what they think the stock price will be later on. In other words, it's speculation. They're not thinking about dividends and payments. They're not buying the stock and sticking it in a safe and just getting those dividend checks over time, which is what the mechanism was supposed to be. They're buying the stock today for what they think they can sell it tomorrow, or they're short selling, or they're going long, they're playing the game, they're getting into the action. And it's a better deal than Las Vegas, because if you go to Las Vegas and you plunk your chips down on the wheel and they spin the wheel again, you win, you get to put that money in your pocket. But if you lose, that's it, the money's gone. That's the way it works in Las Vegas. But in Wall Street, talk about a sweet deal. The way it works in Wall Street right now, since last September, when you spin that wheel and you win, you get to put that money in your pocket. But if you spin the wheel and you lose, they go around to the people, you know, the bellhops and the cocktail waitresses and the desk people and the janitors, and they take a collection to give you back the money that you lost so you can go back to the wheel for another spin. That's what's happening right now. All of these derivatives contracts, they're gambling games. And the people who play them, it's less about the money than it is about the adrenaline and the action and the feeling that you're alive when you're out there playing with numbers that huge. And they've lost huge amounts of money, and they owe tremendous amounts of money on these contracts. And it isn't that the money ever really existed to begin with. It's just a number that came out of some complicated mathematics attendant on the game, playing the odds. And so they've gone to their pet Congress critters, to whom they have been giving so much money through the campaign season, $100,000 to Barack Obama from AIG. And they're saying, hey, help us put these losses onto the taxpayer. We're going to socialize the losses. We're going to make them pay for the losses and the gambling debts. And that's what's going on. When they talk about unwinding AIG or any of these other companies, it's got nothing to do with the subprime mortgages. They're trying to scapegoat that. It doesn't even have anything to do with the executives getting their bonuses. It has to do with these horrendous, by some estimates, $250 billion in this manufactured derivatives debt that is the real problem out there. And the U.S. government is trying to basically pull the economy out of that hole by dumping the debt onto Americans and spreading it around and hoping that it won't be so large that it doesn't crush all of us down into abject poverty, which is exactly what is going to happen because they're going to keep on doing it. As long as the American people let the government get away with taking this corporate debt and dumping it on the people, they're going to keep on doing it. Why should they stop? Why should they stop until you make them stop? We're going to take a break here. 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
You're listening listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy. We've been talking about AIG and the executive bonus issue, which has been blown up so much in the media. It is becoming very obvious. It is an attempt at a distraction to basically keep us looking over here when the real story is somewhere over there. And we're going to wander over there right now with another installment of our ongoing series, Swindler's List. And we're going to be following the saga of Bernie Madoff, as in Madoff with the loop. As of today, Bernie Madoff's accountant has now been charged with securities fraud. And this basically puts an end to the claim that Bernie Madoff did this whole $65 billion fraud all by his lonesome, which is what he's been claiming, and he confessed everything all by himself and said nobody else was involved, and, you know, my kids turned me in, so they're innocent, and I will go to jail, and that's the end of it. And it's that part about that's the end of it which is becoming a real, real issue, because as we know, last week Bernie Madoff finally went into court, and he pled guilty to every single charge and said, yes, I'm guilty, and the judge threw him in jail, and everybody said, yes, justice has been served. You know, with as much money as Bernie Madoff had, and with a very real possibility that he could claim mental illness because this was the guy who founded the NASDAQ, and it's not like he needed the money, you know, Bernie could have dragged out a trial forever. You know, at his age, very possibly the rest of his life. You know, and the only thing that would be put in jail would be his coffin. But instead, he goes into court, pleads guilty to everything, open and shut, boom, ready for sentencing. And a lot of people are beginning to say, this seems like there's a cover-up. And now that we know that Bernie Madoff's accountant has been charged with security fraud, yeah, there are more people involved. There are other players. And one of the stories we currently have linked on whatreallyhappened.com is a story that is coming in, and one of its sources is from the Russian media, where they're saying that Bernie Madoff was part of a large group of very pro-Israel financiers in the United States who were playing all these crooked games to generate these billions of dollars to fund Mossad intelligence operations inside the United States. And this is kind of a little personal vindication, because when the Madoff scandal broke and we saw how many of his clients had been these entities which donate money through AIPAC to congressional campaigns for senators and congress critters who are pro-Israel, and I speculated at that time, what if Bernie Madoff's little pyramid scheme, his little Ponzi scheme, was the funding mechanism by which Israeli intelligence subverted the United States government to Israel's agenda. Now we're beginning to get indications from other foreign intelligence services that this may in fact be the case. And some of the names that are being linked with Madoff as part of this network of pro-Israel financiers are Henry Taub, Maurice Greenberg, who was the former head of AIG, chairman and CEO, and had to step down because of some chicanery going on. Larry Silverstein, well, remember the gentleman who had leased the World Trade Center just before the attacks, made a killing on the insurance from that, was the guy who said, pull it, talking about World Trade Center 7. Mort Zuckerman, who is basically in direct control of 70% of the corporate media here in the United States right now. This is the very group of people that if they are, in fact, working together to sell the United States as chattel to Israel, these are the people who would do it. And so now we get back to the way that Bernie Madoff just went into court and pled guilty to everything. You know, this is a guy who's worried about something far more serious than whether he's going to jail or not. Because seriously, if he'd pled not guilty, I mean, the way they were dragging this out just to get to this first hearing, he could have gone on living in his multimillion dollar mansion, and they could have dragged the trial out longer than Bernie is going to live at his age. But instead, he pleads guilty. It's over. There's no trial. There's no investigation. There's no evidence. Everything gets shut down. Bernie goes to jail in one of these club-fed prisons. And that's the end of the story. And it goes no further. And I think that is the reason he pled guilty, is because there is a much larger scandal and a much larger organized fraud going on than just that $65 billion. It isn't the amount of money that's involved. It's what purposes that money was put to, including maybe 9/11, because whoever did 9/11, it had to cost them a lot of money. Where did that money come from? Follow the money. And that's the one thing they're not doing with Bernie Madoff. They're basically saying, okay, it's gone. We can't get it back. We'll have the taxpayers make up the losses for the victims. You know, we're not going to do a clawback. They've already gone and spent it. They don't want to go where that money went, because I think that's the real scandal here. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Drew in California. Aloha, Drew. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Oh, how are you doing, Mike? First, I wanted to make a comment about earlier in the show. You were talking about the situation with AIG and the bonuses. And I remembered watching John Stewart a while back. He was playing a video clip. It was somebody talking about why they're giving the bonuses to keep their best people.
Mm-hmm.
And John just kind of sat there dumbfounded for a second before he screamed out, "You don't have best people."
Well, I love Jon Stewart. I love The Daily Show. I mean, it's probably the one show, along with Colbert Report, but more The Daily Show. It's the one show my wife and I make the effort of catching every single night. And I made the comment last week, and I hope you'll agree with me on this. We're getting more real news in terms of the things we need to know that are affecting our lives. We're getting more news from The Daily Show than we do from the corporate media, which is, you know, still waving celebrity gossip and yellow journalism and tabloid at us all the time. You know, really, Daily Show has become a major, major a platform for getting these really important issues that affect our lives out there to the public. And, oh, man, I love it. If I'm ever on the East Coast, I want to go see a taping of the show.
Oh, what was that bit when he was on with Crossfire show when they started saying that he was just as bad? And he goes, "My show is the lead in is puppets. I'm not a journalist." But yeah, no, they do a great job, because it's so much more fun to go with reality and show how ridiculous it is. It was a great interview he did with Bill Moyers last year,
mm-hmm.
about 45 minutes long, where they were playing clips and talking about literally how ridiculous some of these things really are when you actually, you know, stop pretending it's serious news. But I wanted to point out the kind of a diversion here. The video that was posted on Sunday night, it was probably the most disturbing thing I'd ever seen, and it was posted later on there. Yeah, it's unbelievable. We've split the atom, stepped on the moon, we've restored sight to the blind, made global communications nearly instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 21st century, Christians are still burning witches.
Yeah, they are. Drew, we got to stop here. Hang on to the phone. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still talking with Drew from California, and I absolutely agree with you, Drew. It seems that, you know, there are a few individuals who are trying to push civilization forward. New technologies, as you said, we understand DNA, we've invented the computer, we have cured so many diseases, we haven't cured them all, obviously, but we are continually making this progress forward, and then you have these, I don't know, it's hard to find a word for them, I guess we'll just stay with the Bible bangers for right now, but it's not confined to just Christianity, who get caught up in these beliefs of legends and fables and fairy tales, and you know, once you get somebody believing in absurdities, you can get them to commit atrocities, and that's what we saw on this videotape. And I got a lot of very hostile and nasty email from putting up this article. And as I pointed out to in one of my responses there, it is, you know, I think one of the responses, well, they're Africans, what do you think? Which is, struck me as incredibly racist because, I mean, Europe had their witch-burning phase. We've had witches being killed around the world over the last 10 years. I mean, there were several in Mexico. There was one in France, one in the Ukraine.
I mean, it's, as I recall.
It's, yeah, in the Philippines, Indonesia. There was like this rampage. 100 witches, accused witches, were killed in Indonesia in this incredible rampage. And we are advanced enough to understand that the tendency for the brain to get into this religious hysteria had some kind of survival value. I mean, they've literally mapped out that when the brain gets into this mode of religion, it's drugging itself. And I suppose that the value was that if you could get somebody caught up in this religious belief, you could send them out to go kill and eat the tribe next door, which is why our ancestors survived and the others did not. Classic case of the dummies going out and killing the smarties. But we've gone beyond the need for this kind of self-induced psychosis, certainly in an age where we're armed with nuclear weapons.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. I think the appropriate term would be delusional fruitcakes.
Mm-hmm. Religiously deranged. I think that's the one I want to use.
Another good one. All right. Well, appreciate the chat. I'll let you get back to your show. I'll be listening
Well,
in.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the call, Drew. Please call in again. And we're going to switch over to Leo in Massachusetts. Aloha, Leo. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering. I sent out two Tom Hennigan pieces about Mr. Madoff, I was wondering which one of them would be more. Let's see what I'm trying. I have it here somewhere. Yeah, there's one about the real estate scam. Are you familiar mm-hmm. with Tom Hennigan?
Okay, I'm having to look for that right now, and I'm going to apologize because this week. We're shooting the season finale of this TV show that I work on as my day job, and I've been gone all morning, and I got back here just in time for the radio show, so I'm a little behind in my email, and you're going to have to forgive me for that one, but I will definitely look for those two articles and go through. Yeah, but there's a lot of this chicanery going on, and the thing that we're seeing, and another reason to suspect that this is somebody's intelligence operation behind it all, is because we've had the Securities and Exchange Commission and all these other regulatory agencies. We're just turning a blind eye to all this stuff going on, whether it was Madoff or AIG. And, I mean, you know, if you misfile your income tax, they're going to send the people with the guns to come after you. But these billionaires are just doing these incredible scams, and the government is like, they've got this real hands-off attitude toward them. And it really does all make sense that what we're looking at here is the funding mechanism for the Israeli subversion of the U.S. government, and that's why the government doesn't want to touch it, because, hey, it's money. Hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars pouring in. You know, who wants to mess with that goose that's laying the golden egg? And I think that's the real reason why the SEC, basically, even with Henry Mykeros, just handing the information about Madoff to them on a silver platter with a big glittery bow on top of it, and they didn't want to deal, they didn't want to look, they couldn't be bothered with it. Obviously, somebody was pulling strings to protect this operation.
Have you seen the on Slate.com the article by Elliot Spitzer about the real problem with AIG?
Yes. And we've been talking about that as well. When we talk about, you know, the bonuses are just a distraction. The real problem with AIG, you know, is out there with the derivatives and some of these other little things they've been doing on the side they don't want people paying attention to.
So how do we push this to the forefront of the news cycle?
We're doing it right here, right now. I mean, the corporate media is losing audience share. They're losing their readership. I mean, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer did their last paper edition yesterday. These people aren't just going to live in closets. They're coming online. They're finding the blogs. They're finding the alternative media. And we're actually seeing this incredible phenomenon where the media landscape, if you will, is actually evolving back to what it originally was, with lots of small presenters, lots of small venues with a diversity of opinion and a diversity of information that preserved, you know, a diversity of information flowing out to the public. So the public can pick and choose, decide what makes the most sense, and make their choices for government based on that. Thomas Jefferson said, the highest duty of a citizen, to keep yourself fully informed so you can make good choices. That's what we're doing now. We're getting away from this one person, one corporation owns all the media and is therefore in control of everything you see, hear, and read. We're breaking away from that. The revolution is actually already started, and it's happening right here as people turn off the TV networks and they go online, and most important, they talk to each other. And the reason for all this stuff we're hearing about, oh, the government is spying and they're reading your email and they're listening to your phone calls, they're trying to scare you into staying silent and not talking with each other. And it isn't working, because every time you speak out, you give everybody around you the courage to speak out. And that is exactly how you force these things to the front of the news cycle. We did it with the Downing Street memo. It took a solid month to do it, but we did do it.
So should we, as the old Italian phrase goes, read this?
Yes.
Read this, NSA.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes, I've got a special file I do that I use for anything that I think is being intercepted and decrypted. So I understand what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. Yeah, talk it up. Talk to everybody. Call in shows like this.
I have two posts that I send out because for Yahoo, I can't send it out all at once, so I have two separate posts. So I do it right at the hour break. So I sent one out at... like 8:55, I sent the second one out as soon as it turned 9. Well, wouldn't you know it, the first post got held up and didn't get sent out till a half an hour later because somebody was reading it to look at it before they let it go. All the lists that I post to, the second one was there half an hour after the first one, half an hour after the first one was sent.
Yeah, I understand what you're trying to say. All right, listen, do me a favor. Send me those two posts, okay? I want to see them. Thanks an awful lot.
What really happened?
WRH@whatreallyhappened.com.
Okay.
Thanks an awful lot. All right, Leo, thank you very much for the phone call. All right, that was Leo there, and it's kind of weird. More and more of these self-declared gatekeepers for the Internet, like America Online and Yahoo, they are taking it upon themselves to scan email and flag certain things for examination. I think it is very contrary to the spirit of democracy. It is contrary to the First Amendment. And it is certainly contrary to the spirit of the Internet as it originally existed back in the 1980s and 1990s, where it was, you know, it was the pure expression of democracy in cyberspace. And you got to say what was on your mind and hold your opinion, and you were not routed off into a free speech zone or subject to all kinds of fines and blockages. And I know that they're looking at this Australian net filtering as the model for the rest of the world, and it's being sold to protect the children from the child porn. I got to tell you, folks, I think 90% of the child porn out there is planted by the government to justify putting controls on the Internet. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. And my comment at the close of the last segment about 90% of the child porn being planted by the government to justify control of the Internet prompted responses in the chat room and in the email, some agreeing with me, others saying you're being ridiculously paranoid and why do you think something like that. And it goes back to something that happened many, many years ago with a part of the Internet called Usenet. Now, before there were web browsers, when the Internet was mostly, well, it was FTP, file transfer protocol, and email, and then Usenet was this news group-based posting system where if you were reading a news group and you posted a reply or a comment or an article, it would become visible to news readers around the rest of the world. And there was no central collection point. It was very homogenous. Everybody was just bucket brigading the data back and forth, consistent with the original design philosophy of the Internet. And it was here that political commentary began to emerge. And it was here where, obviously, the U.S. government began to get very, very nervous about what the Internet was providing to the American people in terms of a non-censorable form of mass communication. There was an effort to basically shut it down. Originally, the Internet was called the ARPANET, for the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency, which funded the original development of the protocol, the TCP/IP, and getting that all to work together. And for many years, the government basically funded the companies that were running what was called the backbone, the main servers that formed the major backbone of the Internet. And there were subdomains and things going off. And as people were leaving defense contractors and universities and going to the private sector or even into their home, they were just setting up links to the ARPANET. It was connected over telephone acoustic modems. This was way before broadband came along. But you could connect in with a dial-up modem, and it was really this wonderful tool, and it made life really, really better. And we had Usenet. Usenet is still out there. It suffered a major body check last year when pressure from the Motion Picture Association of America and the Recording Industry of America convinced the major Internet service providers to no longer carry Usenet, ostensibly because it had become a haven for child porn. And in reality, what was at issue was Usenet was a major place where people were trading pirated software, pirated music, pirated movies, and could do so and swap it without leaving a trace. Very, very difficult to police. So it's another case of those of us who found something very useful having to lose it because of the few bad people who come in and abuse the situation. But back when Usenet was still almost the primary means of mass communication, before the browsers really started coming on, there was this senator by the name of Exxon, and has nothing to do with Alaska and oil spills or anything. And he tried to propose this amendment to bring censorship to the Internet, and it was notable because 1 month before he hit the floor of Congress with his speech about the out-of-control, pornography-laden Internet, we started seeing pornography flood into Usenet. Now, Usenet is set up where there are different news groups for different interests, and there is a specific, or was a specific section, set aside for adult content. That's where you went if you wanted to see bikini pictures or less than bikini pictures. And it was off to one side, like a red light district, if you will. It was there. Everybody knew where it was. And if you wanted to go there, you could. And if you weren't interested, you didn't. But all of a sudden, we started seeing some really gross pornography get flooding into the entire Usenet, everywhere, completely inappropriate news groups. Food recipe groups, pet grooming groups, you know, gold leaf applique crafts news groups. I mean, it was absurd. And you would go to these people who were posting this and saying, there are places where this is supposed to be appropriate. And these posters would say, well, I have a First Amendment right to put this wherever I want, blah, 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 blah. So we do a little bit of digging, and we're finding that all this porn is coming out of these military and government servers. And so I thought, okay, somebody wants this to be here because they're going to make an issue about it. And sure enough, a month later, Senator Exxon got up in Congress with his infamous blue book full of these pornography pictures he was getting from the recipe group and from the gold leaf applique group and from the pet grooming group, and saying, we must bring government control because this Internet represents a threat to the children and blah, 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 blah. So ever since then, anytime the government wants to try and control the content of the Internet, they always go back to it's porn and child porn, and we know they plant the stuff out there themselves as the justification for the real agenda, which is to silence political discussion, which is the very kind of speech the First Amendment was most concerned with. The First Amendment isn't concerned about paintings in the Museum of Art with dung stuck to them. That's a side effect. What the First Amendment is about is political speech, that you may criticize the government openly in public without fear of reprisal. That's what the First Amendment is for. And the Second Amendment is there to back it up. So that's why when I say the government is planning the stuff out there, we know. We've been through it before. We've caught them at it. We've caught them doing it. They're going to create the problem and then sell you the solution. And we already know from the ban list in use in Australia, which was leaked to the web through WikiLeaks, which is now also on the Australian ban list, that they're already spreading out from child porn sites to sites with political content, sites that are critical of local governments, sites that expose corporate wrongdoing are now somehow coming onto this list. And the list wasn't supposed to be public. You're not supposed to be able to go and find out what sites are on the list or not. If you go to one of the sites and it's being filtered, you just get a not available. And that's what they're trying to bring to the Internet. In the long run, I don't think they can do it because there are too many ways around these filters. Every time they put a filtering system on, the people who are really smart about these things, they go through a remote proxy, they come back in from another direction, and they find a way through. People want the truth, and they're going to go where the truth can be found. And even if the Internet were to vanish tomorrow, remember, the Soviet Union was brought down with a network of fax machines. There's something out there called FidoNet that is an Internet that doesn't rely on the ISPs and the Internet. It's packet modem to modem to modem to modem. More and more people are setting up FidoNet servers. All it takes is a computer and a telephone modem. And you get yourself plugged into the system, and it just bucket brigades. It's not as fast as the real Internet by any stretch of the imagination, but it allows you to share information around the country and around the globe without the government peeking over your shoulder while you're doing it. And it isn't that we're doing anything that we are ashamed of or that is even illegal at this point. But you know something? It's none of the government's business what I'm doing on my computer. And we've already caught the government many times taking the information they are gleaning from reading our computer traffic and using it to put money in their own pocket. There have been any number of FBI agents who have been hauled into court for insider trading because they find a piece of information on somebody's computer about a new product that's about to come out, and they, oh, great, I'm going to go buy stock in that company because they're about to make a huge amount of money. And they're not supposed to be doing that, but they do. And for every one they catch and prosecute, there's 100 that are getting away with it scot-free. And that's another reason why we, the people, should defend our right to privacy. The reason the Constitution has those protections in there is because the Founding Fathers knew that government that has the right to peek in on your life can't resist it. It's an addiction. They want to watch you, and anything that they hear or see or read that they can turn to their own advantage, they're going to do it if they think they can get away with it. The beauty of the original Constitution and Bill of Rights of this country is that it understood our leaders are flawed, frail, corrupt, weak creatures. It is the nature of political power. It is going to attract the very people who really should not have it. And the whole point of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was to intentionally weaken and hobble the federal government in order that they not be a threat to the rights and freedoms of the people. Unfortunately, we've deteriorated from that noble ideal by quite a wide margin, and we must address that somewhere down the road. Okay, that's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 5 p.m. Central Time. More phone calls, more news. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones. Enjoy the spring weather. I mean, it's finally starting to get out of that harsh winter. It's still a little cool, but we're going to get there. And aloha, America.